This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Shady's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I had, I guess you could say, random thoughts over the weekend in regards to college football. A team in the SEC, a team in the ACC remind me of one another, and they're two teams that may be getting slept on right now. And I had a couple of thoughts about Clemson as well, how they fit into that equation. We'll get to that in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show. Plus, are the Panthers still potentially a landing spot for Baker Mayfield? The latest on Deshaun Watson. Get to that later on. And a whole lot more throughout the afternoon. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. And the podcasts are also available online, charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. While you're there, you can also leave a comment for the show. Online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at Morrow Middays via the text line 843-608-1734, or you can always join the conversation on the phones as well, 843-721-9500. Hey, the Morrow Midday Show did the Lumineers concert over the weekend. We were both there, myself and Trent, separately. Went to go see Camp, open for the Lumineers Saturday night on Daniel Island. Good show. Did you enjoy the show, Trent?
Oh, it was phenomenal. Yeah, the Lumineers sounded awesome live. I was very surprised. And that's one of those bands, Luke, I was telling you before the show, that you'll hear a song they're playing and you know it, but you didn't realize that it was the Lumineers. Like, you hear them on the radio and stuff. But, yeah, they were awesome. And Camp was good, too. Everybody was good. It was a great show.
Yeah, I enjoyed it as well. Now, I'm a big Lumineers fan, so, you know, I went in, you know, knowing a lot of their stuff, looking forward to seeing it, and they played, I don't think there was any songs that was left off the list for the Lumineers. Camp, different story. You typically leave a show, right? My mom always gives my father a hard time because he does this all, you leave a show, and like, it was a great show, but they didn't play this song, or you always complain about the songs they don't play. That wasn't the case for the Lumineers. I was pleased. Camp, different story. But, I went to college. We became friends. I went to college with somebody who grew up in Ramsey, New Jersey, where the Lumineers are from. It's a two-person band. They've added on to it since, but the Lumineers are really just two people. They grew up as friends in Ramsey, New Jersey. This kid I went to college with also grew up in town, and his girlfriend left him for the lead singer of the Lumineers. And this was before the Lumineers hit it big. They were still in New Jersey. They then moved out to Colorado, so now, you know, they bill themselves being from Colorado or a Colorado band, but really they're from New Jersey. They just moved out to Colorado, then hit it big. And now they're out there, and they say they're from Colorado. Anyways, so this was before she left him, you know, before they even hit it big. They were known in the New Jersey, New York area. They were still a local band trying to become big stars. She left him for the lead singer. I don't think she married him because he's married. I don't think it's the same girl. But they became famous. The Lumineers became famous when I was in college with this kid. And Ho Hey came out, and we would hear it everywhere. Such a big song at the time. And it would drive him nuts. He hated, I'm sure he still does to this day, can't stand the Lumineers because the lead singer stole his girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, I would too. Are you kidding me? Absolutely. I would never pay them money to go see him.
Yeah, so don't tell him I was there Saturday night because he wouldn't be happy.
Great show, nonetheless.
Yeah, it was. And, yeah, he's now a dentist in New York City, so he's doing okay too, but hates the Lumineers. Was a good show. So then a couple of things stand out from Saturday. Number one, I don't know if you were in the building yet. Before Camp came out, Were you in your seat? Were you inside before Camp started?
No, I showed up around, I think Camp did three songs, and then they were done when I showed. So, I was a late bloomer there, Luke.
I was just coming in. I wasn't in my seat yet. I was walking into the building when Camp came out.
Hmm.
Could you guess what song they came out on stage to?
Ooh. Was it, I heard at one point, was it a Rihanna song by chance?
I wish it was.
What did they come out to?
They came out to I thought I was getting trolled. They came out to Tub Thumping.
No way.
Yep.
No way.
The Sean Payton song that we were berating last week on the show. I almost turned around and walked out. And I said, forget this.
Is Payton in the building?
What yeah, seriously. Where was Sean Payton sitting? They came out to the song. In case you weren't listening throughout the week last week, Sean Payton did a graduation at Loyola. He was the speaker at the graduation. And he quoted Tub Thumping, the song, the annoying song from the 90s that we then played on the air. I think we talked about this last Monday. This is going back to Monday. The Chumbawamba song. And I said it was ridiculous to quote such a song to at a graduation. It was so corny. It was lame. We could come up with something better.
That's what you're using to inspire the youth?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Come on. You're a Super Bowl winning coach. Vince Lombardi could come up with something better than that. Chumbawamba Tub Thumping. Then fast forward Saturday night, waiting for camp to come out, and they come out to Chumbawamba Tub Thumping, and the crowd loved it. So I guess I'm in the minority. I guess that really would that'd be very inspirational.
Glad I didn't hear that. Glad I didn't hear it.
I said, oh, my God, I can't. I used to like camp. I can't watch these guys now. Almost turned around and walked out. I thought I was getting trolled. I was waiting in line, walking into the building, walking into the arena or whatever, stadium. And that came on as they were coming out, and I thought, you got to be kidding me. Then on the way home, just a random side note, it was about midnight Saturday going home. I'm on the highway heading home. I pass our station van on the highway.
What? Wait a minute. What?
Yeah.
What was happening?
I have no idea.
Who was in it?
I don't know.
Did somebody steal the van? Is it out there right now?
It's out there now.
Okay, good.
And it's going like 40 in the right-hand lane. And I was driving faster than 40, you know. And so I didn't. It clicked too late. Like, wait a minute. Was that our van? What is it doing on the highway at like midnight on a Saturday?
Oh, joy.
I don't want to be snitching on anybody. I don't know who's using it. But It was a comical thing.
That's somebody's weekend car, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Driving home, like, wait a minute, that's the van. Pulling up traffic in the right-hand
lane. I would have pulled over and put my cautions on and told them to pull over. Who is it? Who's in there right now?
Step out of the van. Our station van. Good publicity on a Saturday night, doing who knows what. But, yeah, it was a fun show, Lumineers. We got a little Tom Petty cover in the encore. That was great. Loved it. Good show, Lumineers and camp on Saturday. Maybe you're in the building. It was a sold-out show. Now, where your seats were, could you see the stage, or were you towards, like, the, you know, were you next to the stage?
I was directly next to the stage, and when we bought the tickets, it did say obstructed view, but I tell you what, Luke, as soon as we got there, and they were cheap tickets, as soon as we got there, I could see right on the stage perfectly. They were great seats. It seems like Credit One Stadium, there's not really a bad seat in there, and you're right, it was packed to the gills, about 10,000 people. It was awesome.
They do a great job. That's the first time I've ever been in there. Haven't been there for the tennis, and I know they just renovated it, right? But I've never been in there ever for any sort of event. I thought they did a great job for a concert.
Oh, yeah. All the food spots and everything there around. There's a bunch of, you know, beer kiosks and stuff. It was awesome.
Yeah, plenty of beer. Right at the bottom of your section, because we were both in the quote-unquote upper deck, the 300s. There's, again, not a bad seat. It's a small enough place. But, yeah, they had the beer vendors like at the bottom of the steps for every section. Concession lines were not that long. I went downstairs because, I'm a little, I guess I can be a little selective with my beer choices. I said, no thanks, not from these vendors. I went downstairs. The beer lines were not long at all. I was in and out. They had like food trucks that they brought in, so different food items. It was good. Not a bad seat in the house. Beautiful night.
It didn't take too long to get in the stadium either. Like, no. I showed up late, and, I mean, we were outside of the stadium for maybe 10, 15 minutes max. It was very easy. They did a phenomenal job over there. It's awesome.
And they're not paying me to say this either. No. I give you my true critique or breakdown. It was my first time ever going to that stadium. Never been to the tennis, nothing. It was very enjoyable. They do a good job. And it's perfect. You have the perfect spot for the stage. They have to block off some of the seats there, but, you know, otherwise, like Trent said, even when you're in the corner there, you still can see everything going on. It's a good spot to go see a show. So now we have Dave Matthews coming in 2 weeks for two nights. Jason Isbell's coming back in a few weeks. I think he's playing there. There's some good acts coming to that stadium over this summer.
I think Kenny Chesney as well is making an appearance.
Yeah, isn't that this week?
That might be this weekend. Oh, boy.
I think there's somebody there this week. Maybe it's Chesney.
Every week, they're having a very good show.
Yeah.
Like, it's very surprising for Charleston. Like, we finally have a great venue to go watch, watch events. It's very cool.
So that was the thing. I was spoiled growing up in Connecticut. We got all the bands to come through because we were right between New York and Boston. Mm. So you'd go to Boston, you go to Connecticut, you go to New York, right? You could, it's another stop you add without, we were an hour and a half So, like, for example, Lumineers came from South Florida. So they had a bus, you know, whatever, 7 hours overnight, wake up in Charleston the next day. If you're playing in New York, it's like, sure, we'll go an hour and a half to the next stop in Connecticut, break up the trip to Massachusetts, whatever. So anyways, point being, we got everybody to come through Connecticut. We were blessed. Then I moved to Central Florida. We got nobody. You had to go to Orlando or Jacksonville, which was about an hour and a half each way. And even then, they didn't get a lot of great bands. I saw Dave Matthews in Jacksonville that once. That's like the only concert worth going to in my time in Florida. Then I've now here in South Carolina and Charleston, a lot of good acts come through Charleston.
Oh, yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll have to see about Dave in a couple. I've seen Dave a bunch. I don't know. We'll see. I'll probably make it out there in 2 weeks. You know, the thing with Dave Matthews, great performers. I love the band. Their set list is terrible. There's certain musicians that have a reputation. Eric Clapton was one. He just plays whatever. He doesn't care what you want to hear. He just plays whatever he wants. And look, he's the performer, but you're paying to go see it. You want to hear the sit. You want to hear the hits. That's why Trent. I call you Trey every once in a while. I don't know why. That's why Trent was there screaming, "Play Ho Hey" all night at the Lumineers. You want to hear the hits?
Play the hits. That's all I was asking, Luke. Play the hits.
Absolutely. So, anyways, last thing, because we're very narrow casting here. If you're not a fan of the Lumineers, if you weren't there Saturday night, you don't care. It was a good show. Now, this goes for all performers, but the pros and the cons. The pros, they came out with a strong start to the set list. They played like five hits right off the bat, and the Lumineers came out and hit it. But there were about three lulls in there where people, at least where I was seated, everyone was standing for most of the show. But there were certain times of the concert where everybody was in tune, like, we don't really care to hear this one. And everyone would sit down and be like for a song or two. And they only have so many albums, but they played 21. I thought it was a longer set list. The set list online has 21 songs from Saturday. Felt longer. Six of the 21 were from their newest album that just came out. Now, I know you're touring to sell the album, and they only have so many albums, but to play a third of the show off of your new album, that's a bit much. People don't know those songs as well as the hits from over the years. Now, they opened up with their big new song, Bright Side, which is off the new album. But just to all performers, these are my rules for live music. Don't overdo it with the new songs. I know that's the whole point of the tour, but that's not why people are there. They want to hear the hits. And Tom Petty's my favorite musician, and he used to do a thing where he'd play his new songs consecutively, and he'd give you a heads up and say, hey, we're going to play three songs off the new album. If you want to go get another beer, this is the time. You want to go to the bathroom, here's your chance. We're going to play three songs off the new album, then we'll get back to the hits. Because you got to play the new stuff, but you can't go overboard. The Lumineers, a third of their set Saturday night was off the new album. I thought that was a bit much. And the other thing I'll say is I was concerned going into a show like this when you have Camp and you have the Lumineers. And they're two, they're like indie bands. Indie is the genre. They're not rockin' bands for the most part. Certainly not Camp. Lumineers have a couple songs like that. That was always a concern of mine to see them live in concert. When you don't have rockers up there, what type of show is it? And so credit to the Lumineers for using the little catwalk to go out. They did a great job with the crowd work to go out there and be part of the crowd. Go out into the center of the floor and perform a lot of songs out there. They had a second drum set up. They had multiple microphones. It was great. Good crowd work, because that's what you have to do. You got to get the crowd involved if you're not like really rocking it out. But on the flip side, the flip side of that, and this is just general observations of a concert, a lot of the songs they perform sound right off the album. There aren't a lot of changes to the songs. And that's the one thing. I think if you're going to go to a concert and someone's performing live, I'd like to see some variations of some of the songs, because otherwise you could just sit at home and play the albums, right? And look, the Lumineers were good. It was a good show. They put on a good show. They're great performers live. He's got a great voice, and you see that in person. But just in general, when it comes to rock shows, give me a little variation at concerts, right? Play your songs, jam a little bit on one of the songs. Change the tempo of a song a little bit. Not too much where people, you know, you ruin someone's favorite song, but give me a little different. Give me an extra guitar solo in there. Give me a little extra verse with some crowd work with a little call and react type of deal. Anyways, it was a good show Saturday. Over the weekend, I was thinking about college football, as one does. I was listening to the Lumineers thinking, wait a minute, how many games is NC State going to win this year? And I was thinking about the ACC and the SEC. There's a team from both conferences that that I think are very similar, remind me of one another. And it's NC State in the ACC, and it's Kentucky in the SEC. Couple of schools that don't necessarily have that rich football tradition. Couple of schools that you don't expect to win the conference. Couple of schools that seem like they overachieved last year. But I think this year, I heard it described well. I think it was about NC State. Like, they're a couple of upsets away from surprising you or potentially winning a conference. Just like in Seinfeld, when Elaine says to Kramer, I think you're more than just a few tweaks away from a normal relationship. For NC State and Kentucky, it's the opposite. Like, they're a couple of tweaks away. You catch a couple of breaks. You surprise a team here or there. You get a little help from somewhere else. More so NC State than Kentucky because it's still the SEC and you have the defending champs in your division, Georgia. But these are two schools that you don't think of when it comes to football, but they're both coming off good years and they could both be surprisingly good this year. For NC State, they won 9 games last year. They bring back 17 starters. They bring back their quarterback who may be one of the best in the ACC. Just like Kentucky, they've had a long time head coach there. And NC State, for Dave Doran, he's never won more than 9 games. This year, maybe, could be the chance. They have a relatively easy schedule this year. I mean, the ACC isn't all that challenging to begin with. But you get East Carolina, and you get Charleston Southern, and you get UConn in the non-conference. You get Texas Tech at home, not terrible, with a new head coach there. Now you have to play at Clemson. That's the first conference game. That will be a huge game. But you get Florida State at home, and you get Wake Forest at home. You get UNC at the end of the year. NC State's one of those teams. They're bringing back a lot of guys. They're the only team in the ACC to bring back both coordinators, head coach, and quarterback. 17 starters, 9 wins last year. We'll have one of the better quarterbacks in the conference. ACC is kind of wide open. You just have to get past Clemson. And NC State could be that team that last year maybe you didn't see Pittsburgh and Wake Forest coming. This year maybe it's NC State. Kentucky's similar in the SEC. Now, I don't think Kentucky could actually win the SEC. And I do think maybe they've plateaued after winning 10 games. I don't know if you can get any higher than that. But similar to NC State, they're bringing back plenty of pieces. Their quarterback's coming back. Could be one of the better ones in the SEC. Longtime head coach who's done a good job there. They do have a change at the offensive coordinator spot, and they lost both their tackles on the offensive line. That's the biggest concern for Kentucky. But you may not think of Kentucky. When you think SEC football, you probably skip right over Kentucky, not realizing, like, yeah, they finished second in that division last year. You know, if you could get a couple of surprises, and I'm not telling you, these are not my predictions that Kentucky's going to go win the SEC or at least be in the SEC title game. But I think both Kentucky and NC State, based off what they did last year, what they're bringing back this year, you don't think of them for their rich football tradition, at least not recently. You know, they're not winning their conferences. But Kentucky could be a tough out once again, and NC State could be a real surprise in that ACC. NC State may become the team to beat this year in the ACC, as crazy as it sounds. For Kentucky, they start the year with Miami of Ohio. They have Youngstown State. They have Northern Illinois. You can try to rack up the wins early before you get into that SEC schedule. And once you get into that SEC schedule, of course, you have Vanderbilt on that schedule. You get Georgia at home this year. Mississippi State is the cross-division team. You get the Gamecocks at home. Two teams, Kentucky and NC State, that I think are fairly similar. Longtime head coaches, maybe overachieved a little bit last year, or that's just how they are. Bringing back talented quarterbacks, a lot of pieces coming back, not a ton of change in the coaching staff. Maybe they build off of last season and surprise some people. Now, when I look at NC State and the ACC in general and Clemson, my concern for Clemson would be, I guess, mostly at the quarterback position. And now that you have these changes on the coaching staff and you're bringing back DJ, who needs to be better at the quarterback position, I think we saw last year for Clemson and what they did or did not do offensively that there needs to be something that changes, right? That offense last year was not good enough. Whether it was the play calling, the quarterback, we're going to have a new play caller this year. Maybe that's the change that Clemson needs. But when I look at Dabo, and Dabo, to me, we talked about this last week, right? I still put him number 2 when you come to ranking the best coaches in college football. I still put him ahead of Kirby Smart. I'm not jumping off the – I'm not completely burying Dabo after one potentially disappointing season a year ago. But you do look at the track record, and it includes – I don't know if you would call it stubbornness, but, you know, whether it's not using the transfer portal because he likes the guys in-house, doesn't maybe want to recruit over their head by using the portal or just keeping up with the changes. Whether it's the coaches – where for a long time, right, not a lot of turnover on the coaching staff, and when there was this offseason, he just promoted from within. Whether it's even at the quarterback position, wanting to start Kelly Bryant at least to begin the year over Trevor Lawrence, hesitant to go to Deshaun Watson freshman year. I don't know if you would say stubbornness or just he's got a plan, he's going to stick to it, he likes how things are done. Coaches leave, he's just going to promote from within, do the same thing you've been doing, right? Transfer portal, not interested. I got my guys here. We have our same routine we always do, how we find them. We wait until they're, you know, they get their driver's license before we can even offer them. Quarterback, same idea. DJ was our, Kelly Bryant was our guy. He's going to be our guy to begin the year. We'll see about Trevor Lawrence. DJ was our guy. We'll see. He's going to be our guy this year. We'll see about Cade Klubnik. But something's going to have to change for Clemson, whether it's adapting the offense, maybe a quarterback change midseason this year. But based off of what we saw last year from the offense, then again in the spring game, that's still the level of concern there. Is that offense? There's some talented quarterbacks in the ACC that you're trying to now keep up with. And for Clemson, the concern would be how much can they change heading into this year? Either may have to change the quarterback or change what you do offensively from a play-calling standpoint or a philosophy or whatever it may be. Because obviously it didn't work last year, didn't look great in the spring game, and you got some other talented quarterbacks in the ACC you may have to try to keep up with, such as the one coming back to NC State. Throughout this offseason, I'm talking myself more and more into NC State. 17 starters back, won 9 games last year, only team in the conference to have both coordinators, quarterback and head coach, to have them all return from a year ago. Quarterback played well. I think it was 35 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, something crazy like that last year. He had a really good year that nobody really took notice of. Easy schedule in September to try to get them off on a good foot. NC State's very intriguing in that ACC. They've never won more than 9 under Dave Doran. Maybe this year's the first time. You're not really thinking about them. Don't expect them to compete for the ACC title. Maybe they will. When we come back, could Baker Mayfield still wind up with the Panthers? It's more Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
So show me family, all the blood that I will bleed. I don't know where I belong. I don't know where I went wrong. But I can write a song. I belong to you. You belong to me, my sweet home. I belong to you. You belong to me, my sweet home.
Could Baker Mayfield still wind up with the Panthers? The Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Heard this Saturday night at the Lumineers show. Their most popular song, Ho Hey, which they broke out early, and they went out into the crowd. It was well done. They had the crowd sing along with them. That's what you got to do. When you're a band like that, right, you listen to that song right there, acoustic guitars, kick drum, not a whole lot of rocking to it, good vocals. You can't just stand up there and play the song. A little boring. So they went out in the crowd, had the crowd sing along. A good show Saturday. Camp disappointed. Didn't play a couple of their big hits. And I always read the set list online. Their big song is By and By. They haven't played it in their last 3 shows. What are you doing? That's why people are buying tickets. Well, maybe to see the Lumineers, right? But people that want to see Camp want to hear you play your biggest song yet. They haven't played it in 3 concerts. Unbelievable. That's, like I said, Clapton's got that reputation. Just plays whatever he wants. Doesn't care. Dave, man, I love Dave. Set lists are usually terrible. He plays whatever he wants. Not great. You got to play the hits. Hey, Baker Mayfield, could he still wind up with the Carolina Panthers? We got more stories over the last couple of days that this is still a possibility. Steve Reed of the Associated Press reported, in fact, he said, I've reported several times the Panthers are still interested in Mayfield or Garoppolo at quarterback, but in order for a trade to take place, the other team would have to agree to pick up a large portion of their salary. Nothing has changed on that front for weeks. Pro Football Talk also had a report. Panthers, Seahawks, Browns reportedly are in a holding pattern on Baker Mayfield. I was thinking about this. If we get to a point where eventually they move Baker. Now, let's look at this from all angles. For the Cleveland Browns, I can understand why the Browns would be hesitant to move Baker right now. The reports we're getting is that they want a team to take on a lot of that money. If they're going to move him, they don't want to, you know, if they're going to have to pay him, you might as well just keep him on the roster if you're paying him anyways, unless he's going to be a real pain causing problems in the locker room. But if you can get over some spilled milk here and allow Baker, if he stays and he can be a good teammate, it's like, well, we're going to pay him whether he's here or not. Might as well stay on the roster. Unless, again, of course, another team, the Panthers, come in and say, okay, we'll pick up the tab. We'll take that money off your books. At that point, of course, Cleveland would say, okay, well, we don't need him, so let's save some money and get him out of here. But if a team's not going to do that, I understand why the Browns are holding on to him. More importantly, though, we'll hear about Deshaun Watson. I love this quote from, I think it was Deshaun's lawyer or Tony Busby, one of the lawyers, said, well, we expect to have an answer on Deshaun's suspension by June or July. That's a very broad, by June or July. So you're essentially telling me, like, by August, we'll probably know something. Okay, great. It's still May. So you're telling me in the next 3 months, we may know something. All right, good to hear. But if Deshaun is suspended, and let's say it's for 8 games, 6 games, whatever it may be, they brought in Jacoby Brissett, but if you're the Browns, right, wouldn't you want Baker Mayfield playing those games until Deshaun could come back? Wouldn't that be valuable for Cleveland in a tough division to have Baker still there for however many games Deshaun can't play? And from Baker's perspective, wouldn't you want to play nice to be given that final opportunity to showcase yourself? Because Baker, last time we saw him, he was not great this past year, and he was coming off of all sorts of injuries. That could scare a team away. And I know Baker, at this point, probably feels like this relationship is beyond, you know, getting fixed. He's done with Cleveland. There's no going back. I'm not playing for the Browns. But if both sides can make nice here, they could both get what they want. It could be a showcase for Baker. If he plays well, you have the trade deadline or wait till the offseason when you become a free agent. And you play well enough, right? A team will be more interested in you then than maybe they are now. And if you're Cleveland, well, you get a good backup quarterback until Deshaun Watson can play. It'd be a win-win for the two sides. I think they should still try to make it work temporarily. The Browns should tell Baker, like, yeah, don't worry. Right, well, you know, you're not here for the long term. We'll get you out of here. But in the meantime, if you play for us those first couple games while Deshaun's suspended, you help us win, maybe make the playoffs. In the process, we help you look even better, increase your price tag. Somebody would be willing to take you on. Both sides could win. Now, from the angle of another team, like, say, the Carolina Panthers, the Panthers, of course, should still be interested in trying to improve the quarterback position because it's still not good enough. But I was thinking about this as I was looking at the NFL. What's the competition for the Panthers? Say we get to a point where push comes to shove, the Browns have to move him. Who are they moving him to? In these reports, many will also say the Seahawks. But is Seattle interested in something like that? The Seahawks are not going to win that division this year. They're not going to compete, and Baker's not going to make a difference. Like, oh, we got Baker Mayfield. Now we can actually go win the NFC West. If I'm Seattle, I'd rather, for lack of a better term, tank at this point and draft a quarterback in next year's draft. Now, I know Pete Carroll is like 70 years old, so maybe at this point he's not interested in wasting a year, you know, tanking. He wants to win now. I don't know. But it'd be the best thing for the organization of Seattle to just let Drew Locke and Geno Smith go out there and play this year and then hopefully set yourself up to get your quarterback of the future in next year's draft, especially in that division. You're not winning that division. Cardinals, Rams, Niners, you're not even going to compete in that division, even with Baker Mayfield. So if I'm Seattle, I'm not interested in Baker because I'm not trying to get better at the quarterback position now. I'm trying to get better a year from now in the draft. And to get to that point, I got to kind of stink right now. So Baker, all due respect, we don't want you. We'll roll with Drew Locke and Geno Smith and lose a bunch of games and try to get a C.J. Stroud or a Bryce Young next year. So I would say Seattle, check them off. If I'm Seattle, I'm not interested. You bring in Baker, he's a free agent a year from now. He comes in, say he wins you six games. All right, now suddenly you're not getting one of those top quarterbacks. And Baker's about to be a free agent, and you don't think he's your long-term answer anyways. You know, like, what's the point? You don't need a bridge because you want to be bad this year unless you're going to get that franchise guy. All right, you're not going to turn down somebody who you think, like, hypothetically speaking, if Deshaun Watson was available. You bring him on because it's about more than just this year. But for Baker Mayfield, no thanks, right? We'll just be bad this year and get a quarterback next year. Take our chances with him. Otherwise, if you go through the league, right, the Bills, Patriots, Jets are all set at the quarterback position. The Dolphins are unknown, but it's not like they're going to bring in Baker to compete with Tua, I wouldn't believe. The Ravens, for the time being, are set. Baker, the Steelers are reportedly interested, but the Browns wouldn't trade him there. In the AFC South, the Colts, Titans, and Jaguars are set for the time being. The Texans are the one team up in the air, but they'd probably rather just take their chance with Davis Mills, see what they have there, and if not, go back into the draft next year. In the AFC West, that division's set, right? Broncos, Chiefs, Raiders, Chargers, they all have their quarterbacks. NFC East, Cowboys are set. The Eagles have questions. The Commanders maybe questions. Giants have questions about Daniel Jones. Those are all teams that could use an upgrade at the quarterback position. I don't know if any of them would be interested in Baker. NFC North, Bears, Packers, Vikings, for better or worse, are all set. And the Lions, for the time being, seem to be okay as well, I guess. Again, I don't know if Baker's a huge upgrade. NFC South, I mean, the Saints, Falcons, Panthers, we can make an argument for all three having to upgrade at the quarterback position. We've only heard about the Panthers being interested. And in the NFC West, I don't think any of those teams should be interested. So my point being, when the Browns finally look to move Baker, like, I don't know how many good options, realistic options you have other than Carolina. Would the Dolphins actually want to bring him in? Would the Giants or Eagles? I don't think so. The Seahawks shouldn't want to. And then the Browns look around and think, like, oh, okay, our only trade partner is Carolina. We'll have to send them there. It's like in The Office when they're buying back the Michael Scott Paper Company, and Michael Scott says something along the lines of, I don't have to wait out them, I just have to wait out you, David Wallace, because you know, David Wallace didn't want to look bad at the next shareholders meeting. And if you're the Panthers, it's like you look around and think, like, I don't know if we're competing with anybody. We don't have to wait out anyway. We're just waiting out on you, Cleveland, to the point where you're not going to want to pay that $19 million price tag, and you're going to feel forced to move him, and we're the only ones still here interested. I heard over the weekend somebody compare it to, like, a yard sale. Show up at the end of the yard sale when they didn't sell some things. They're going to sell it to you a lot cheaper than they would have a couple of hours earlier, because now they're just going to have to throw it out or bring it back inside. Now they're willing to give it to you for a portion of what they were originally asking for. And they're usually never asking for very much at these yard sales. But same idea for Cleveland. They're holding on to Baker. Nobody else, I think, is interested. We're going to get to a point this summer where you're either going to have to suck up the $19 million, right, or move him. Like, you don't really have an option. Cut him, trade him. Either way, it's going to stay on your books. And then they'll look around for a trade partner, and maybe the Panthers are the only team at that point that are interested. The only two teams really hear about are the Panthers and the Seahawks. And if I'm Seattle, I wouldn't be interested. I want to be bad this year. Get a quarterback next year. Now, last thing on all this, Warren Sharp always puts out interesting information. He put out a chart where it looked at quarterbacks from a year ago in the second half when the game was within one score, trying to determine how good a quarterback was in clutch moments. And he broke it up into four tiers. And you had the tier where a quarterback was inaccurate and inefficient. You had the tier where a quarterback was accurate but inefficient. You had the tier where quarterbacks were less accurate but still efficient. And then you had the quarterbacks that were accurate and efficient. Aaron Rodgers is number one there. Accurate and efficient in clutch spots. The quarterback that was at the very bottom of the inaccurate and inefficient, which I would tell you was the worst quarterback in these spots, that would be Justin Fields. Understandably so, because he was a rookie. Second would be Taysom Hill, the worst quarterback in clutch spots. Third, Trevor Lawrence, who did not have a good rookie season, but still just a rookie. And then fourth, Baker Mayfield. Fifth, Andy Dalton. Sixth, Sam Darnold. So point being, for the Panthers, maybe it's, you're just trying to find, like, the lesser of the evils right now. Of the quarterbacks that were worst in one-score games in the second half, right, clutch spots, either trying to put a game away or trying to come back, Baker was the fourth worst quarterback. Darnold was the sixth. So kind of pick your poison if you're Carolina. There's only so many options out there. You got to choose the best of the bad options at that quarterback spot if you're the Panthers. We'll see if Baker ever is eventually moved, but if he is, I don't know how many other teams are truly interested outside of Carolina. When we come back, it's time for Trent's Takes. It's the Morning Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Trent and myself were at the Lumineers concert Saturday. Now Dave Matthews coming to town 2 weeks. He'll be here Friday and Saturday. I seen Dave of a bunch. I was thinking about this while I was there Saturday. I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to get tickets to go inside. Maybe I hang out outside and listen to the music outside.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if there's a restaurant across the street you hang out outside or something. I don't know. Listen to the songs. I don't know if there's a good spot around there. Have you ever done that before for a concert? You just hang out outside and just listen to the music for free?
No, but it sounds intriguing. And there's, like, a strip right next to Credit One of, like, restaurants and stuff. Actually, intern Anderson was saying that he was at a bar on Daniel Island, and he could kind of hear the music towards the end. But, if there's that, I think there's a pizza place right there directly across. We can get in there and sit outside. Yeah, I'm not spending, another $60 on a ticket.
Yeah, Dave will probably be even more, too, than the Lumineers. Because I've seen them a bunch. I don't know. I figure, maybe I'll just, if it's a nice night. We used to have a guy, when I was in minor league baseball, we had a guy who would come to the stadium, but he'd sit in his lawn chair behind home plate across the street. And he listened to the broadcast. He listened to me. I loved him. He listened to me every night on his little radio, and he'd just be out there. And he'd bring a cooler, with some drinks, and it'd be a nice night, and he'd just sit out there, and just he would hear the crowd roar. He'd be across the street from the stadium, outside, listening, waiting for, like, foul balls, having a couple beers, and listening to the game on the radio. And I always think about that guy. Now, I wouldn't do that for baseball, because baseball, you might as well just sit at home and listen outside on the radio, right? You still need the visual. A concert, you know, like, you're just there to really hear it. Of course, you want to see them also perform on stage, but the big thing, of course, is hearing the music. So if I can find a spot around there where I can hear it well enough, I don't know.
I think we'll be able to, Luke. Yeah, because, you know, I was looking at ticket prices, you know, before during the break, and they're up there.
Tell you what, if you know, if we can't get a little help around here with some tickets, we may have to sit outside of that pizza parlor and listen to Dave that way.
Got to make a couple calls.
That's right. We do it around this time every day. We find out what's on the mind of the producer. It's time for Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The radio cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, I don't want to keep harping on our weekend with the Lumineers, but I do have to address something that happened to me during the show, and I need to get, you know, your overall opinion, because you've been to more concerts than I have. So during a Lumineers song, it was a little bit of a slower song. There was a couple people, it was like you were saying, a couple people were sitting down.
Yeah.
There was one person in front of me who was standing up. Now, I stood up the entire time, and I was chatting with somebody next to me. We're kind of talking, you know, life and where she was going to school, things of that nature. And so we were just chatting. And then the person in front of me turns around and says, "Hey, do you mind keeping it down? This is my favorite song." Now, she was bawling, crying while this song was going on, so I felt bad. But then I said, you know, just out of immediate reaction, Luke, "Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot I was at a concert. Yeah, you know, I didn't know I was supposed to be quiet the entire time." What's the etiquette right there? I was rude coming back, and I felt bad about it. But, I mean, I didn't really care at the time. What's the etiquette, Luke? Like, do I need to be just, like, dead silent the entire show? Or can I have a conversation when I looked around my section and there were a lot of people sitting down? What's the move there, Luke? I got to know, because I felt pretty bad the rest of the night.
This is a tough question.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of nuanced. Like you said, if people are sitting down and they're not into the song, I think you're a little more prone. You could have conversations at that point. You got to kind of read the room. I don't know. I think you're in the wrong, though.
Ah.
Because I think I would compare it to, like, if you go to a movie theater, right, and you're watching a movie and people are talking, like, you're there, you're paying money to see the entertainment in front of you. A concert, same idea. Like, you're there, you want to make sure you can hear the music and not have people be now, if you're talking about the show, if you're singing lyrics, that's fine. If you're, talking about how many siblings you grow up with, I don't know. I think you may have been in the wrong here in this
situation.
I
could have been. There were a couple people that were with me that, you know, said I was in the right. And then, I mean, the group of her friends in front of, I mean, they absolutely hated my guts for the rest of the night. There was no doubt about it. But, I didn't change my tone of voice. You know, I was there. I was excited. I was singing along to, you know, the one song that I knew. And I was cheering loud, Luke. So I just thought I was being a good fan. I may have been talking too loud. I don't know. But nobody else around, you know, were bothered by it. I was getting along with everybody in the section, you know, except for these people in front of me. And then, you know, they get mad at me for being at an outdoor event just chatting up somebody. What's going on here?
Yes, okay, now that's also a fair point. I don't know how loud you may have been talking. It would have to be pretty loud, because usually the music's so loud it drowns out everything. I've had people around me having conversations, but it's not, you can't even really make out what they're saying. You know they're talking, but it's not loud enough to drown out the music. So
at that point,
maybe you shouldn't be having a conversation, but I've had people have conversations around me, and I didn't think, like, man, I can't hear the song. These people are talking so loud. You're at a concert with the big speakers. The music still should be loud enough. Now, if you're yelling in her ear, a little different.
I felt bad, you know, because apparently it was her favorite song, and she was bawling her eyes out. And Luke, I was doing one of those things, you know, because I couldn't really hear the person I was talking to, so I would lean in, you know, I'd do a lean in. I didn't think, you know, people could hear me, you know, whatsoever, but maybe I need to keep my tone of voice down for concerts going forward.
Well, the other thing I'll say, too, in defense of you.
Thank you.
And I don't automatically jump to your defense. I try to be fair. But to defend you, what you probably should have responded was, like, look, if you have a girl there who loves the music so much it brings her to tears, she probably shouldn't have gotten the cheap seats.
Yeah.
All due respect to where you were sitting.
Thank you.
You're in the corner of the stage.
We're in the back. Yeah. I mean, you know, I was about 10 rows from the back of the stadium. Mm-hmm. You know, like, these were bad seats. And everybody up there was, you know, we weren't really watching the show. We were kind of. And then there was this group of gals who didn't like what we were doing the entire time. So, I don't know. Let me keep my voice down and let me not have, you know, conversations while there's a slow, sad song going on.
I guess. But it's almost like going to the bleachers at a baseball, right? The outfield bleachers with all the bleacher creatures. Everyone's drunk and then, like, upset. Like, how come they're being so rowdy out here? Well, if you really wanted to pay attention to the game, go sit, like, behind home or up the first baseline, not with all the drunk college kids in center field. So, similar, I guess. Like, she should have, if she loves the Lumineers that much, spring for the better tickets closer to the stage where you don't have to worry about that.
Thank you, Luke. All right, so now you were kind of not on my side. Now you're a little bit on
my
side.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in the middle.
I'm on the fence.
You're in the middle. I did feel bad about it the entire night. I kept talking about it. I was like, I was told to shut up during a concert. This is unbelievable. I didn't even know what was going on, Luke, but that was my experience outside of the great Lumineers performance. They did absolutely amazing. Now, Luke, over the weekend, the Miami Heat went into Boston, TD Garden, and dominated. I wouldn't say dominated, but they did very, very well without Jimmy Butler in the second half. And you know who stepped up? And I've been preaching that they needed to step up the entire playoff run. That was Bam Adebayo. Mm-hmm. 31 points, absolutely dominated. Luke, he can do this. He can do it on any given night. I wonder if it's Jimmy Butler and him not having the correct connection, but they've seemed to play well together. But if Bam Adebayo can give 20, that's all I've needed. I've said take 10 shots. If you can give me 20, you can beat this Boston Celtics team. Now, on the flip side of it, if the Warriors have to play the Heat in the finals, I'm incredibly nervous. Because I watching these games, Luke, when Steph is saying night-night as soon as he hit a three-pointer to the Dallas crowd in Game 2, doing turnaround threes where he's not even looking at it in Game 3, this feels like 2015. It's absolutely terrifying. And you were talking about dynasties earlier. As far as my generation goes, I've never seen anything like the Golden State Warriors. Like, we had the Heat for a little bit, the Cavs for a little bit, but it's been the Golden State Warriors, the Lakers, you know, kind of on the back half of Kobe's career a little bit when they beat the Magic in the finals and all that. But, like, this Warriors team, we've been talking about how they're kind of a step off, and then Klay starts hitting threes, and Steph looks like, you know, young Steph, and Draymond was playing extremely well last night. This is going to be tough for the Miami Heat if they get through this Boston series, which I do think they will. I think they'll close it out in six games. They won't win tonight, Luke. I do believe they'll cover the spread. It's 6 points. Even without, there's some injuries. You know, Tyler Hero won't be playing. Who cares, right, at this point? You know, he's not doing anything when he comes off the bench. I just need Bam Adebayo and Jimmy Butler to step up in the big moments. I don't think they'll win tonight, but they'll close out this series. But I am incredibly nervous if the Warriors and the Heat match up. Even though the Heat play great defense, this Warriors team, I'm getting flashbacks to 2015 because I always cheered for LeBron after he went to Miami and then he goes back to Cleveland. I always wanted LeBron to continue to succeed because he brought me championships.
Right.
Absolutely amazing. And every year outside of the 1 year, the Warriors dominated him game in and game out. This feels like 2015, Luke. The Warriors are so much fun to watch. The team basketball is unbelievable. I don't know if you noticed, but Jordan Poole and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, they run this play, and you're a basketball nerd, where they basically lock arms in the middle of the paint. They'll lock arms and do a slingshot going the other direction. So they'll do a full 360 and both run to the corner. Luquan, how do you stop something like that? If they're doing it correctly, which they are, and Steph got multiple points off this slingshot play, how do they? I've never seen anything like that. Have you ever seen two teammates lock arms and slingshot each other during a basketball game to get to the corners? I've never seen anything like it in my life.
No, I don't think I have. I know, it's like the shake and bake in Talladega Nights with John C. Reilly giving Will Ferrell a bump to the finish line. Credit to the Warriors. Look, not only the players they have, the experience, the DNA, the champion DNA, but Steve Kerr deserves a lot of credit too because they're phenomenal in the third quarter. And again, last night, the big difference was the third quarter. They have blown teams out coming out of the locker room in the second half with some sort of adjustments. They win the third quarter every night. And they're also, they've set the record for most point paints per game in a series under Steve Kerr. So they're getting easy buckets against Dallas as well. So yes, they have great players. They've been here before, but also Steve Kerr knows what he's doing. This has been a bit of a mismatch with Jason Kidd and Dallas and the Warriors. They're getting a lot of what they want, and they come out of these locker rooms in the second half and just put these games away.
No, and yeah, it just seems like they've been doing it for the last 10 years now, and it's finally coming to fruition after Kevin Durant leaves. Unbelievable, Luke. Last thing here, watching Get Up this morning, Dan Orlovsky and Mike Tannenbaum, I believe his name is, Tannenbaum, former NFL GM, were debating, Luke, if Aaron Rodgers is a bad teammate for not showing up to voluntary OTAs. Now, I believe Tom Brady is not attending, Matthew Stafford's not in attendance, a couple other quarterbacks across the league. I would like to. Dan Orlovsky agreed that he doesn't need to be there. I don't think he needs to be there, Luke. I mean, why do you need to be at OTAs? I know you have a rookie wide receiver you want to make connections with, but that will come once training camp comes, and I'm sure they're going to work out throughout the summer. But why do these, a four-time NFL MVP, he barely practiced all last season and still won the MVP, and I know people will say, if you would have practiced a little more, they might have beat the 49ers at home. That's not true. The 49ers just played a pitcher-perfect game on defense. Luke Morrow, does Aaron Rodgers need to be at OTAs, or are the Green Bay Packers going to miss the playoffs? That's what Mike Tannenbaum made it sound like, not Aaron Rodgers not being at OTAs, that they're just going to miss the playoffs.
I'm usually for the idea that the veterans don't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, when you look at that wide receiving core, you know, there's some changes. You got some young guys. Davante Adams is gone. I think it'd be helpful to try to get on the same page with these guys. When Tom Brady went to Tampa, look, veteran quarterback, greatest of all time, you don't think he needs to work on some of this stuff. But during a pandemic, he was getting people together illegally in a park to get on the same page. So if there was a year, maybe this is the year for Rodgers. Generally, I say no, veterans, it's not important. You don't have to be there. Maybe this is a year. Does it actually impact like the season? I don't know. They would know better than me. Orlovsky's been through it before. I don't know if it really plays a huge role in terms of, like, you know, when they lose a game in the season. It's like,
right.
Oh, well, this was because he wasn't at OTAs. I don't know.
No, I've seen photos of Aaron and, like, Randall Cobb and a couple other quarterbacks, a couple other wide receivers on the Packers squad, Alan Lazard, working out together in Calabasas or wherever, you know, his mega mansion is. But, I don't think Aaron Rodgers needs to be here. Unless you're a quarterback, like, I know Russell Wilson is at OTAs. He's at a new team, a brand new team, brand new organization. He needs to be there. Matthew Stafford's first year with the Rams, he needs to be there. But a guy who's been there for 18 years, it's like, all right, I'll show up in training camp, and his body will be ready to go, and his arm will be fine.
Yeah, I usually have the same thought, right? Unless it's a new team. This is the one exception. Rodgers, obviously, same team, but just some changes with the wide receiving core. You know, they say if you've done it for so long, you don't need the stuff. But I'll tell you what, Bobby's been doing fan talk for a long time. He doesn't just show up and go on the air, right? He still comes in early and gets his prep time in. So just because you've been doing something for a long time doesn't mean you can just start coasting. We'll wrap up hour two next. Tomorrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
More time listening to you speak your mind. Now I'm thinking about it every day on my mind, a typical way. Are you a life force? Thinking about it every day on my mind, a typical way.
Wrapping up hour two of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This is what we want to hear from you, Camp, the band that opened for the Lumineers Saturday. They haven't played this in their last three shows. That's their number one song. Title track off their newest album. It's their biggest hit in the charts. Didn't play it. Once again, what are you doing? Hey, I was looking up, so I Googled the slingshot play. I'm very curious about this, and I found an old video clip of Steve Kerr from about a month ago, not that old, saying that Alvin Gentry, former, you know, head coach in the league, now one of his assistants, came up with that play, which is really interesting because I know a coach who used to work with Gentry in the NBA, and he always said Alvin Gentry was a bit of an Eddie Haskell in that he knew X's and O's. He said it was terrible X's and O's. He didn't know how he kept getting head coaching jobs because he was a great, like, people's person. He'd win you over in the room, but when it came to the whiteboard, he was very bad breaking down teams. And then yet, here he is coming up with this great slingshot play, feeding crow to a friend of mine who used to coach with him, saying, hey, I do know a thing or two about coming up with great plays. The slingshot, helping the Warriors slingshot back into the finals. Hour three next.